Now, the most live local talk with Live from the State Capitol with Fred Dicker. Fred is a longtime columnist of the New York Post and the political analyst for Channel 6 News. Now, Fred Dicker on Talk 1300.
Bad boys, bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? When you were 8 and you had bad grades, you go to school on the golden rule. So why are you acting like a bloody fool?
Well, that's a question being asked around the state capitol today. If there was ever an official theme song for the New York State Legislature, this could be it, and who knows where it's going to stop. Welcome to the state capitol. It's Music Friday. I was trying to think of appropriate music. We've tried various ones over the months and years, really, to kind of capture the underworld atmosphere around the state capitol with a story today about Dean Skelos. Not a big surprise. We know that the U.S. Attorney's Office has been looking at a lot of these people. A story, Dean Skelos being looked at for the money he is paid, I was hesitant to say earned, from a law firm down on Long Island, Nassau County, where he's been affiliated for some time. What does he do for the money? We've asked him that in the past. They never would explain it. Does that sound familiar? It's not as much as Sheldon Silver, $600,000 to $700,000 a year. I think Skelos is making just under $200,000 a year, something like that, where he most recently filed a financial disclosure statement and said it was between $150,000 and $250,000. The report initially came from WNBC Channel 4 in New York. That's the local NBC affiliate. The New York Post today says in the Post story, the Post has confirmed that Skelos is being looked at, but in Skelos's favor, I would say, is the fact that the New York Times did not report this story. And once it came out from NBC Local last night in New York, the Times didn't seek to get it into the paper. And I say that because the Times really has been leading the way on these reports and obviously has excellent lines into Preet Bharara's office. So if anything big was coming down involving Dean Skelos, I think the Times would have been on top of it. But hey, you know, maybe NBC has it. There was a rumor around last night that, and this is a rumor, like I emphasize, it was a rumor around last night with nothing to back it up. But the rumor was that Skelos, like Silver, was going to be arrested. But there's no indication of that. And as you heard in the news broadcast, Skelos's office has issued a statement, that is to say, Skelos has issued a statement through his office saying he hasn't been contacted by the Fed. So that's not likely, that's for sure, but you don't know what's going on, and if Skelos was close to something like that, I'm not sure he would tell us. This is Music Friday. By the way, lots going on out there, obviously, with Carl Heastie looking more and more like the next speaker. We've got a little story in the Post today. Assembly sneaker, a play on the word speaker, with the S in sneaker being a dollar sign, referring to Carl Heastie saying, fave for Shelley's job, paid X for zilch. And the lead is the Bronx Democrat on the verge of becoming an ex-assembly speaker paid his baby mama, which is a phraseology for the woman who mothered his out-of-wedlock birth, $2,500 from his campaign treasury, raising ethical concerns following disgraced Sheldon Silver's corruption bust. Heastie made made two campaign payments to aspiring model Alveda Robertson, the mother of his five-year-old daughter. Robertson did not to design a campaign website. Robertson did not design the site, but subcontracted the work to someone else and still got paid. We're going to be talking about Carl Heastie, who looks like the all but certain next speaker, with a guy who works side by side with him in the assembly in a few minutes. But before that, Michael Benjamin, the assemblyman who chose to leave this place, to his credit. Before that, a little bit more Music Friday music. Haven't played this in a long time, but it's certainly fitting for all of these people around here. By the way, if Dean Skelos takes the fall, who's in line? Tom Libous, also under indictment. It's just unbelievable what is going on and could still be going on around here as everybody awaits for delivery on Preet Bharara's pregnant promise of, quote, stay tuned. Haven't played this one in a while, but it fits almost all of them. Let me see if I can get it to go, because we have to... Here we go.
I take my text this morning in Matthew 7, chapter 13, verse...
Little sermon to our public servants.
For wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be that go in thereat.
Amen.
This train is known as the Black Diamond Express train to hell. Sin is the engineer, pleasure is the headlight, and the devil is the conductor. I see the Black Diamond as she starts off for hell. The bell is ringing, hellbound, hellbound. The devil cries out, all aboard for hell. First station is Drunkardsville. Stop there and let all the drunkards get on board. I have a big crowd down there drinking Jump Study, some drinking Shinny, some drinking Moonshine, some drinking White Mule and Red Horse. All of you drunkards, you got to go to hell on the Black Diamond train. The Black Diamond starts off for hell now. Next station is Liars Avenue. Wait there and let all the liars get on board. Have big crowd liars down there. Have some smooth liars, some unreasonable liars, some professional liars, some barefaced liars, some ungodly liars, some big liars, some little liars, some go to bed line, get up line, lie all day, lie on you and lie on me. A big crowd of liars, you gotta go to hell on a Black Diamond train. Next station is the Seawoodville. Wait there, let all the Seawoods get on board. Some of you have been deceiving one another ever since you've been the world. Friend deceiving friend, husband deceiving wife, wife deceiving husband. But they got to go to hell on a Black Diamond train. Next station is Conjuration Station. Wait there and let all the conjures get on board. I have a big crowd of Louisiana conjures down there. They got to go to hell on a Black Diamond train. They're always taking brick dust and brass pins and match heads, make little hands selling one another. But you got to go to hell on a Black Diamond train. Next station is Confusion Junction. Wait there and let all the confused makers get on. Some of you raise confusion in your home, confusion on the street, confusion in the church, confusion everywhere you go. But you got to go to hell on the Black Diamond train. Next station is Fightstown. Wait there and let all the church fighters get on board. I have a big crowd of church fighters down there. They never go to the prayer meeting. They never go to the Sunday school. They never go to the morning service. They always stay away from the morning church until they hear of a business meeting, and they come running up out of Brazos Bottom to pull off a big fight in God's church. But all of you church fighters, you got to go to hell on a Black Diamond train. And now the Black Diamond train will stop just a minute to take on brimstone for hell.
Well, a lot of them are on the Black Diamond Express to hell. That's known as federal prison when you arrive. It's a sorry lot for sure. This is Fred Dicker. The show is live from the state capitol. The capitol's been rocked again, although it remains to be seen whether this one's for real or not, the way last week's rock from Preet Bharara involving Sheldon Silver was realer than anybody realized. Who would have thought that Speaker Silver would be gone in just a matter of a few days? And that's the reality that they're dealing with here now. This is Fred Dicker, live at the state capitol. We're going to take a break. When we come back, former assemblyman and from the Bronx, and Carl Heasty colleague Michael Benjamin. We'll be right back.
Trustco is the Capital District's hometown bank. From mortgages to home equity loans to investment management, Trustco is your family's one stop for financial independence, safety, and financial security. Trustco Bank wants you to feel protected and secure with your online banking services and offers e-statements, which gives you the option of receiving your banking information online. Trustco also offers online bill paying. Log on to trustcobank.com and find out more about online banking and e-statements, making your family banking more secure, accessible, and convenient. Trustco also offers mobile alerts via email and text. Trustco will notify your email account or send a text alert with updates on balances, transfers, and checks clearing. Trustco helps manage your account with quick and easy electronic messaging to your most available and convenient data source. Trustco has over 135 branch locations between the Capital District and Central Florida. Trustco, your hometown bank. Member FDIC and equal housing lender.
WSG.net, your web, IT, and marketing experts present Living Digital.
Spending all that time in front of the computer may not be such a bad thing for older Americans. A new study says it can help ward off depression among retirees, especially those who live alone. In a study of Americans ages 50 and older, researchers say internet use reduced the probability of depression by 33%. Participants apparently were able to counter the effects of loneliness and isolation by living digital.
WSG.net helps Capital Region business live and thrive with everything digital. Let them help you. Dial 435-0682. Talk 1300 relies on WSG.net for our website, and your business should too. WSG.net for web design. WSG.net for internet marketing. WSG.net for IT consulting, network support, and web hosting. The digital experts. WSG.net. 435-0682. Don't wait. 435-0682.
You're running your business, and we at Wix.com know things can get stressful. But creating your website doesn't have to be. With Wix, you can create a professional website all by yourself. It's easy and free. You don't have to be a programmer. Just drag and drop everything into place. It's your website, your style. Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your own stunning website today. It's easy and free.
When building a deck, you have a choice. Redwood decks begin life as indigenous plants. Plastic decks begin life in industrial plants. Redwood decks come in rich, natural colors. Plastic decks come in dioxide colorants. Redwood decks will last a long time. Plastic decks will last forever in a landfill. Real, strong redwood.
Visit GetRedwood.com.
Let's return to Live from the State Capitol with Fred Dicker here on Talk 1300.
Well, a lot of people have heard and seen Michael Benjamin over the years. They've read him as well in the New York Post and in other places. He was elected to the Assembly from the Bronx. We won't hold that against him. I'm from the Bronx. And took office in 2003 and chose on his own to leave the Assembly after he completed his term in 2010. He's been watching very carefully, as we all have. But he watches it with an insider's view. He also knows the putative next speaker, assuming things stay as they are, Carl Heastie. He worked side by side with him, more or less, to take over the Bronx organization just a few years ago when Heastie became the Bronx County Democratic Chairman. And Michael Benjamin is joining us right now. Good morning, Michael. Thanks for being with us.
Morning, Fred. Pleasure to be on with you.
Okay, just to clear something up, because of the climate around here, I'm sure you'd appreciate it. You didn't leave the Assembly because Preet Bharara or anybody else was investigating you, did you?
That's correct. I left on my own volition.
There's a rarity around here.
8 years is enough.
Did you hear the statistic? I think Bharara himself may have used it, that more people have left the Senate under indictment or because of convictions than have been defeated at the polls.
Yes, he did say that.
It's really extraordinary. Well, tell us first, if you would, just from a big picture point of view, since you were in the shop here in the Assembly for many years, what your reaction was to the specifics of the charges against Sheldon Silver and the rapidity with which Silver was forced to give up his speakership.
First part was stunning. The second part, Silver leaving in less than six days. Are being shoved out, that didn't surprise me. I kind of thought that that would happen. You can't have a speaker who's under a criminal complaint and has been arrested, possibly will be indicted, awaiting trial for 2 years. That really would hinder the work of the Assembly. So his ouster had to happen. I was happy it was sooner than later.
Given all the rumors that were out there and the fact that under the newly reconfigured ethics law, Silver had to disclose for the first time just a year or so ago how much a range, but pretty close to how much it was, how much he was earning or being paid anyway for his outside work. Were you really totally surprised that it turned out that the huge money he was earning really didn't amount to very much work? It was based on referrals of one form or another.
Well, one, I was shocked at the amount of money he was.
Well, we knew that, right? We knew that. That was public.
For years, it was over $250,000, $200,000 and above.
No, we knew it was over. We knew it was over, or that it was about $750,000 under the ethics law. And give Andrew Cuomo credit for it. That was approved, I think, in 2011 or 2012. That required much more precise disclosure of the range of earnings, including the range that Silver was in.
Right, as well as your clients or what kind of work that you actually did.
Yeah.
And it turned out, when then you start thinking about it and you think about the number of hours that the speaker Shelley spent as leader of the assembly, the meetings, et cetera, and the fact that he was very observant on Fridays, you sort of wonder, like, when did you do your work? And Sunday morning right. to Monday after to Monday morning? Yeah. It was kind of hard to realize, to think about how he was able to amass his wealth and how it was, the way in which it was earned.
By the way, part of the stunning nature of the charges was that one firm that Barrera cited, Silver had not disclosed on his financial disclosure form with the state, which was legally required. Now, that's not a federal crime, but it does look like he committed a state crime by that and was intending to hide the source of income.
That's the allegation.
Yeah.
And we'll see how it proves out. And he did then later claim that he did have his own law firm, yeah.
Yeah, but he was getting, right, that's what he claimed. But he hadn't even disclosed that. He made some modest adjustment of the language, I think that was what happened. But let me ask you about Carl Heastie. It looks like with the decision, which I think was unavoidable, of Joe Lentol and then Keith Wright to get out of the race, that Carl Heastie's got the juice with the organization's plural in New York City to now easily become the assembly speaker. Tell me if you agree with that. And then if you would talk to us about a guy who was your colleague in the Bronx, you were side by side with him as an assemblyman from the Bronx, and you worked with him, as I understand it, when he became a chairman of the Bronx organization.
Yes. You're right. It does appear that the Carl Heastie train is on a fast track and it's about to leave the station. I understand that Frank Sedio was at his fundraising event last night in the Bronx, as was Jay Jacobs from Nassau. Right. He had a couple of Queens assemblymen were there, and the city controller Scott Stringer dropped by. I understand from the New York Times that a group of 10 suburban Democratic Assembly members are standing with him. But yes, he is fast approaching 76.
For sure. What's he like? What kind of guy is he?
He's very bright. He gets along well with others. I guess you could say when we played basketball in the assembly, he played point guard. So he's very good at distributing the ball to people and recognizing who has strengths and working with them on their strengths. When we moved to Al Jose Rivera, because he was running a friends and family plan in a Bronx County organization, we worked with every member of the assembly who from across the borough. We worked with the reformer like Jeff Dinowitz, myself, the two Diazes, Mike Benedetto from the East Bronx Club City area, Morris Park. And it was important that, you know, we had, as Bob Kastetter called us, the Rainbow Rebels, because it represented every aspect of the Bronx and the desire to reform what was happening in the county. I see Carl taking that sort of fervor and doing that in the assembly.
So there's no reason to legitimately tag Heastie, is there then, in your view, with having coming from the most corrupt borough or corrupt county in New York State, that he was never part of any of that, the Pedro Espada type of corruption? Is that your sense?
Yeah, that has been my sense about him as a man and him as a member of the state legislature.
Did you see the New York Post? I'm sorry, go ahead.
He's an accountant by training. He was a budget analyst at the city controller's office, and he has an MBA in finance.
So he's not a CPA. He's not a CPA though. I don't think he's ever has he worked as is he an accountant?
No, he hasn't. Yeah. You don't have to be a CPA.
Yeah.
I mean, he has an MBA in finance, which means he understands financial accounting. He understands the importance of the budget. You know, he has the abilities to get the job done. And I think it's important that, you know, we move away from always having attorneys to as leaders in the legislature.
Yeah.
It is supposed to be a citizen government, and we need to move away and allow other professionals to have an opportunity. I don't think Carl is about embarrassing himself, his family, or the legislature.
You mentioned his family. Did you see the story in the New York Post today about a friend of his, a mother of his out-of-wedlock child, Alveda Robertson, supposedly or allegedly being paid $2,500 from his campaign treasury for work that she didn't do? She just sort of, according to the story, farmed it out to someone else. Do you know the woman? Is that anything of consequence from your point of view?
No, I'm not familiar with Carl's family affairs. I wasn't even aware he had a child until recently. I'm told that there was a signed contract with her, and like many contractors, apparently she subcontracted the work. others will have to figure out whether it's nefarious or not. I don't think it is, from what I've read.
Right. We're talking to Michael Benjamin, a former assemblyman who works side by side with Carl Heastie. It looks like he's going to become the next speaker. Well, you know, Sheldon Silver and speakers going back to 1975 have all been Jewish until now. Carl Heastie would be the first African-American speaker. We have an African-American leader of the Democrats on the Senate side as well. Michael Benjamin, you're African-American. What do you think of the consequence or significance of that, if any?
Now, back in September of 2013, when Shelley was getting, when it was revealed Shelley was covering up the sex abuse of Vito Lopez and others, I had written that it was time for Shelley to go and that it was time to begin to look at other communities to change the demographic of the speakership, and that it should catch up with demographic change. I think it's helpful. It's important. You know, Carl's prepared. Any other African-American, whether it was Jeff Aubrey, Keith Wright, Kathy Nolan, as a woman, an opportunity to go in a different direction, to reward folks who have the skills to do the job.
So what's more important from your point of view? You're a guy who went to science high school, Syracuse University. Is it important to have the best and the brightest, or is it important to have the person be as kind of a symbolic statement, or is it a combination of the two?
Well, if things go as they appear to be going, I think Carl Heastie is representative of both. Okay. He will be the speaker of the state assembly, who happens to be an African-American, who happens to have a Caribbean background, much like I do, and many of members of the legislature do. He's no different than you as a as yourself, a Bronx boy. And we should be happy that it's a Bronx boy who's talented. He went to he went to one of the state universities.
Yeah,
he went to one of the better city colleges, Baruch, to earn his MBA. I think he's very much what many of us would aspire to be. I mean, one of the things I was teasing about on Twitter the other day was I was surprised that the New York Times didn't lament about the lack of a Jewish candidate for the speakership.
Well, I don't think they've ever been big on that from my reading.
No. If I'm mistaken, last year they lamented about the fact 2 years ago there wasn't a Jewish candidate for mayor. They wrote a very long piece about that.
I think they wrote about that as a kind of unprecedented in modern time situation, but I didn't think they had lamented.
It read like a lamentation, but okay.
Was it I didn't realize you were an expert on theology that way in Lamentations, but was that an editorial or was that a column? I thought that was a column that...
I thought it was a regular news article.
Well, I don't think that a news article then is necessarily the New York Times particularly making a statement, that an editorial would be, but I understand what you're saying. Let me ask you this. What about Carl Heastie and some of these others never having been identified with any genuine effort of reform or taking on Speaker Silver? I can't recall him ever saying, he doesn't say much about anything. No comment, by his own admission, is a favorite statement, which I don't think is especially good for transparency. But what about all these candidates? You knew them. Did any of them, from your knowledge, ever take on Speaker Silver?
In conference, when we had discussions about issues?
For reforms, for changes that could make the assembly a more small-D democratic place that would have had more transparency. Everybody knows the problems here, the domination, almost dictatorial, by the speaker. Did you ever recall him ever speaking up against that?
During my tenure, it was mostly folks like Sandy Galef and Scott Stringer. I mean, Scott's the one who got folks to decide to work together to end the out-of-seat voting. And I think that was an important measure to occur.
I think people are pointing out now, Michael, that a lot of the candidates for a speaker have all been saying they want real reforms, but they had never, the argument goes, ever shown any willingness to fight for those reforms in the past.
Well, now it's now up to the body to move in the ones that they think are important to do. I think it's important to have term limits on the speakership and term limits on the years that persons serve as committee chairs. That way you engage younger members who don't have to wait 10 years to become chairman of the election law committee.
Oh, I agree with you. It's a very frustrating, if not humiliating and infantilizing situation here for many able young members who come up, and they have no real outlet for their skills. They're hardly ever used. They're not consulted. Michael Benjamin, we got to run. Listen, thank you. Go ahead.
I guess much of your first early years in the assembly, you're working in your district to establish yourself. But members do have a great opportunity to express themselves and their opinions during conference, and have had effect on the outcome, on the fate of legislation as well. So it hasn't been entirely stultifying in the way in which you and others seem to describe it.
Except nobody ever sees that. The conferences are always held behind closed doors, and there's a kind of a code of silence over that, right?
Because you want people to be able to, to speak
their mind and
not fear any kind of retribution.
Yep, I understand that. There's some merit to that argument. There's also merit to having some more public discussions as well. I'm sure you'd agree. We've got to run. Michael Benjamin, thanks so much for joining us this morning. This is Fred Dickover, live at the State Capitol. We've got some Rensselaer County nostalgia coming up next. We got to take a break for the news.
WGDJ, Rensselaer, Paul Vandenberg, Fred Dicker, and Michael Sabajeptinos, the Capitol District's talk station. Talk 1300.
A new target for Preparara. I'm Mike Carey in the Talk 1300 studio at the Times Union Center. A new investigation by U.S. Attorney Preparara is reportedly focusing on Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos. WNBC in New York reports Barrara is looking into outside income earned by Skelos and his ties to the real estate industry. He's employed by a Long Island law firm, but the report says the law firm itself is not under investigation. The firm has done business with the state, but Skelos has said in the past he has no involvement in that business or with lobbyists represented by the firm. The report says no charges have been filed at this point. Skelos issued a statement through his spokesperson calling the report a thinly sourced report that doesn't meet the standards of serious journalism. He says he hasn't been contacted by the U.S. Attorney's Office and will have no further comment. One of the candidates to replace Sheldon Silver as Speaker is withdrawing from consideration. Joe Lentil says he recognizes he doesn't have the support to become Speaker, so he's withdrawing his name and putting his support behind Carl Heastie. Heastie is still in the running along with Kathy Nolan and Joe Morelli. Morelli will take over on an interim basis Monday when Silver steps down. A group of Assembly Democrats, meantime, is taking steps to push the new Speaker to embrace changes in how the legislature does business. The group is calling for reforms, including limits on the Speaker and committee chairmanship positions. They've sent a letter to each of the Speaker candidates asking them for their position on reforms and their commitment to change the process before the vote is held on February 10th to pick a new Speaker. A Schenectady woman is facing charges after authorities say she failed to send her children to school for weeks. The Daily Gazette reports Carolyn Olivero registered her daughters, ages 9 and 11, to attend school, but withdrew the registrations a short time later. Report says she told school officials she was relocating to New York City, but the family remained in Schenectady and the girls remained out of school. Officials tell the paper Child Protective Services got involved, but Olivero still refused to re-register the girls. She was arrested after failing to send them to school for 6 weeks. It's unclear if the girls are now in school or if they remain in Olivero's care. It also remains unclear why she refused. Questions surround the disciplinary action taken against a teacher in the Cobleskills School District. Officials will only say a high school teacher has been placed on administrative leave, but no other information, including the teacher's name, has been released. Officials do say the teacher had classroom duties in the high school and coaching duties at the middle school. An investigation is underway involving Schoharie County Sheriff's deputies, but no other details are available. The State Office of General Services is moving forward with plans to develop a site in downtown Albany that was originally earmarked for a convention center. OGS is issuing a request for proposals to develop the site that's bordered by Hudson Avenue, Broadway, Green Street, and Prine and Hamilton Streets. The Albany Convention Center Authority had bought 7 parcels totaling 4.5 acres in anticipation of using that land for a downtown convention center. When the original project fell through, though, the authority agreed to turn over the land to the state. Weather forecast from Time Warner Cable meteorologist Heather Morrison. Periods of snow today, high 30. Partly cloudy tonight, low of 0. Wind chills tonight as low as 16 below 0. Currently, it's 30 degrees. I'm Mike Carey. You're up to date where you can hear Siena basketball versus Manhattan tonight at 6:30, beginning with the pregame here on Talk 1300.
let's return to Live from the State Capitol with Fred Dicker here on Talk 1300.
Well, it was just after New Year's Day when we had gotten the sad news that former Governor Mario Cuomo had died that I got an email that really put me back on my heels. Contained in the email was a clipping of a story I had written back way back when, some 40 years ago or nearly that, in the mid-1970s when I was working for the Albany Times Union, part of the Rensco Bureau, Rensselaer County Bureau. It was an article about Marvin Honig, who was then a very well-known figure in politics over in Rensselaer County, where politics was thought then, as it is now, as a contact sport affected by strange doings, strange elements perhaps that are in the water over there. We used to joke all the time at the Times Union about how strange a place Rensselaer County was. But there was this article that I had written about Marvin Honig having a little fun as the Rensselaer County attorney, the official attorney for Rensselaer County, wrote a letter to then Secretary of State Mario Cuomo demanding that Rensselaer County be provided with its legally required oleometer, oleometer being a device to measure the specific gravity of sperm oil from whales. And then Mario Cuomo responded with a very clever response. He was a very witty, articulate, and interesting guy. The article, the email that I received was from none other than the aforementioned Marvin Honig, who's now living in Florida, and he's joining us right now. I don't think I've spoken to Marvin Honig in close to 40 years. I used to enjoy speaking to him all the time. He was a terrific guy, very bright lawyer, very clever inside political player. And he made my sojourn over in Rensselaer County very, very entertaining. Good morning, Marvin. So great to speak to you again.
Hi, Fred. Nice talking with you.
Well, it's a lot of memories out there, including memories of the likes of Joe Manupella and Joe Warren and Joe Casey and Tommy Restino. How long have you been down in Florida? You're in the Tampa area, is that right?
I'm in St. Petersburg. I've been in the Florida area full-time since 2003, but I was a snowbird starting in the mid-90s.
Okay. Did you go down to Florida to work, or did you go down to Florida really to retire?
Basically to retire.
And compared to Rensselaer County, and by the way, it's supposed to be below zero there tonight, as you might imagine, how have you found living in Florida? You've been there almost now, I guess, a decade as a resident.
I enjoy it. Particularly the fact that there's no income tax down here.
I mean, how do you not go, for that reason alone, unless you're a state retiree and your state pension is not taxed?
It's a big mistake in New York to have such high income taxes.
There's no question about it. What about some of those names I mentioned? I mentioned to Bob McManus, I don't know if you remember Bob or not, that you were going to be on a show with me, and he was sorry he couldn't make it. But he said, ask him about Joe Warren, I guess one of the most, who he called a sumbitch, S-U-M-B-I-T-C-H. Joe Warren was quite a character. I guess he was a Sand Lake County legislator who was a Republican. And apparently in response to something you had done, maybe he switched conferencing with the Republicans, moved to the Democratic side, literally pulled his chair over one night and threw control of the county at that time to the Democrats. Is that what you recall?
Well, what happened was we had an 8-7 county legislature. It was 8 Republicans and 7 Democrats. And the majority always appointed heads of department. One problem was that when the local law created a public defender, Joe Warren had his candidate, the late Jerome Frost. And most of the Republicans wanted Pierce Russell, who was an assistant district attorney, to be the public defender. When Joe wasn't getting his way, he started leaning toward voting with the Democrats. And at one point, it became so obvious to me that I got up off the podium where I sat next to the chairman, walked down onto the floor of the legislature and picked up Joe's desk and moved it to the Democratic side of the chambers. And then I wheeled Joe in his chair across and put him with the Democrats.
This is a better story than I realized. That's incredible. How did people's jaws dropping while you were doing that?
Yeah, they were very surprised, including the chairman of the legislature. And I'll never forget the look on Joe's face as I wheeled him across the aisle.
Did he protest? What did he say?
Well, he wanted me fired. Yeah. And as county attorney, I gave a ruling that that was not sufficient grounds to fire me. But I did offer to draw a resolution to have me removed. And I drew up the resolution, and at that point, the powers that be, the Republican powers that be, kind of mentioned to Joe that his wife might lose her job in the county clerk's office. And as a result, he withdrew the resolution I drew, and we let him come back to the Republican side.
Wow.
His candidates naturally did not get the position.
You know, I can see now why Bob McManus remembered that so vividly. What a story. That must have been front page news, right?
It might have been. It was a lot of fun, though.
I would think. Was that when Joe Casey was the Republican chairman for the county, or had he already been shipped off to prison or jail?
He was already at that point convicted. Actually, in a way, I have to thank Joe Casey for becoming county attorney. Back in the 60s, I was doing a lot of criminal law, and I wanted to become an assistant public defender. Tom O'Connor was public defender at that time, and he was sort of a mentor to me.
Really?
And Joe Casey sent word through Tom O'Connor that if I could get my uncle, Harry Honig, to run for supervisor in Nassau, they would create a spot as assistant public defender for me. The reason for that was that my uncle had been a very well-liked supervisor for a number of years. And after he stepped down, the Republican replacement was defeated by a Democrat for the first time since 1917.
Wow.
My uncle didn't want to run, but as a favor to me, he ran and won. But when it came time to put me in as assistant public defender, there was a snag. On January 2nd, 1968, I went to the county clerk's office. I was sworn in. The Times Record took a picture of me being sworn in, and everything seemed fine. But then Joe Casey sent word there was a problem because the supervisor of the town of Skodak, where I lived, was unhappy with my appointment. And they rescinded it and, in fact, put a piece of paper over the oath of office and covered it up so it couldn't be seen. And they kept saying that at each meeting of the county legislature, well, then it was the Board of Supervisors,
right,
Republican control, that they would create the position. But I heard through the back door that they weren't going to do it. So I decided the only thing I could do to get even was to bring a reapportionment suit. And reapportionment wasn't well known in those days, but I had been studying a little on it. And at night, I started typing up papers. I would go to the state law library and read up on it. And
this is on a one-man, one-vote principle? Is that what it was about?
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because of the Supreme Court ruling, which transformed the country, really, and gave so much more power to urban areas over rural areas.
Right. The Supreme Court had ruled in Reynolds against Sims that you had to have one man, one vote. Anyway, I brought a lawsuit in the name of my wife, Netta, as plaintiff against the state of New York to declare the law that set up the Board of Supervisors as being unconstitutional, and I sued the county legislature, the Board of Supervisors.
Right.
And I won. And as a result, the Board of Supervisors was ordered to be abolished at the next election by the court. And I actually drew up the boundaries for the new county legislature, and that was approved as a temporary measure by the court.
How did you get yourself back into good graces then, so that you would become, when there was a county executive and the government form of government was changed to a legislature and a county executive, to become county attorney?
Well, before that, just a little while later, Joe Casey was, I believe, indicted after a state investigation commission report.
Right. Now, he was the county highway superintendent as well as the county Republican chairman. The SIC that used to exist looked into him. Something about his home was that at Grafton Lakes having the roads paved and other things taken care of by the county.
Yes, and reportedly he had a lot of young women working in the highway department office.
I didn't know that was illegal, but
in any event, after he was taken out of office, a man by the name of Ray Seek, who ran the Ford Motor Company's operation in Green Island, a very, very fine gentleman, became county chairman. And one day he invited me to lunch and asked me to come back into the fold and had me appointed as assistant county chairman for legal affairs. And we moved ahead, and I went back into court, and we had a new election, which at which time we won the 8-7 county board, the county legislative office. When the Democrats won that, they won it the first time, and they wanted a county charter form of government with an appointed executive. That was voted down, and at the next election, when the Republicans took over 8-7 and I became county attorney, I redrafted the proposed charter for an elected executive, and that was approved, and at that point, we elected
Bill Murphy,
county executive.
Yeah, was that Bill Murphy was the first?
Yes, Bill Murphy was the first, and it was a surprise because he hadn't been in county politics at all, really. He worked for the state legislature, and he was brought over for that. And he was a terrific politician, I got to say that. I think if he had stayed in New York, I think he would have been governor.
Like a lot of people, he fled. Do you remember the time that I stole, quote-unquote, his first budget, and we had it in the Albany Times Union the morning that he was supposed to present it to the people in the legislature?
He was very upset.
To say the least. I've never told anyone how I pulled that one off. That was really, in my early days as a journalist, I really considered that one of my great coups.
One of the interesting things is when Bill Murphy first took over his first day in office, he called me in and talked about my staying on as county attorney. And he told me that the Republican hierarchy, I think particularly Doug Hudson, who was county chairman at the time.
He was a state senator also, wasn't he?
Yes. Yeah. He had told Bill that he shouldn't keep me on because I couldn't be controlled. And I told Bill, I said, look, I have a private office. I don't really need the job. And anytime you're unhappy, just say the word and we'll shake hands and go our separate ways. Hmm. And it worked out well. The only time that there was an issue was whether I could be fired by Bill. And the legislature wasn't too happy with that. And I drew a local law that said that he would appoint me, but it would take an act of the legislature to remove me.
Yeah. Marvin, we're talking to Marvin Honig, the former Rensselaer County attorney, talking about some remarkable days in local politics. How long did you stay on as county attorney? When did you leave?
I left in 1984, but if remember, I was a part-time county attorney, and I had a staff.
Fair enough. I was going to ask you.
As a matter of fact, my county telephone had an extension in my private office, so when I was called, nobody really knew if I was at the courthouse or the private office.
Something like that today might be very controversial. But, you know, giving the date that you did, it meant that you were there when Joe Bruno became the Rensselaer County Republican chairman, which was around 1975, I think, or 76, 75
right.
or 74. And then he almost immediately went off to the Senate. Did you know Joe Bruno much? And did you, have you followed the travail that he was put through in his ultimate vindication last year?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it was interesting when going back to the 1960s when Ray Sieck asked me to come on board again. He arranged for me to get a job in the state assembly. And it was basically a no-show job. And I was then interviewed at the state assembly by Joe Bruno, who then worked at the state legislature.
He worked for Perry Duryea, or is in Duryea's
right.
Right.
And I asked Joe what my job was, and he said, just do whatever Ray Sieck asks you to do. And I don't think I really did anything. It was basically a no-show job for
right.
the session.
That's the way it was done back
but,
then.
At one point, they had a state investigation commission on Joe Bruno because he had a telephone company.
Yes.
And the county, Caradian it was called.
Yes.
And Caradian got the contract for the county
phone
telephone
system. Yeah.
And later it was being investigated after 1984, after I left the county attorney's office, and I was subpoenaed to testify about it. And, you know, I told them that as far as I recall, there was a request for proposals. It was all legitimate. And the investigators were very unhappy with my testimony, and it never went any further.
I'll tell you, that, in a way, that presaged the federal Northern District of New York's investigation of Bruno, where they were very unhappy that they couldn't send him to prison, and they couldn't find a witness to say that the actions he took officially were in response to bribes, and they did everything they
right.
could, including threatening witnesses, to try to get them to say that.
Right.
Let me ask you about, remember Tommy Restino at all? He was one of my favorites.
Oh, I love
Tommy. He was from Hoosick Falls.
He was the judge in Hoosick Falls, and I remember he ran an Elixir gasoline
right.
station.
Hold on just for a second, Barbara. Hold on for a second, because my quick story about him is one day I was covering him at the county legislature, and the meeting had ended, and I was talking to him, or maybe it was the next day, but I was talking to him privately, and he says to me, Fred, he says, you know, sometimes I get up there on the floor of the legislature, and I say to myself, Tommy, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. And I said to him, Tommy, we're sitting here thinking the same thing.
Let me just go on and drop more about Tommy. Tommy ran an Elixir gasoline station, and he was always available to the troopers because he was always there if they needed to have somebody arraigned.
Right.
And sometimes in the middle of an arraignment, a car would pull up for gasoline, and he would have to adjourn while he went out and serviced the car.
That is fantastic.
But at one point, there had been a problem in the town of Hoosick where a bunch of teenage boys started burning barns down. And we had a preliminary hearing in Hoosick Falls that went on for two or three evenings because there were so many people involved. Each boy had...
Well, we only have about 2 minutes left.
Okay, I'll make this quick. Everybody had an attorney, and Tommy hired two stenographers instead of one. He told one girl to take the questions and one to write down the answers. And it became a circus because they had to talk to each other if somebody wanted something read back. But Tommy announced to the group, he said, I am the judge, and I make the rulings, but I don't always agree with it. He said, I have to follow the law, but I don't agree with the rulings I'm making.
Marvin, listen, I'd love to get you back another time. We just don't have enough time to cover everything I was hoping to cover, including some other interesting people who emerged from Rensselaer County, like Bill Powers. Can I get you back another time?
Absolutely.
Great. Well, listen, it's great to catch up with you again. Great to hear your voice. I know there are many other great stories to be told. I'd love to tell them here. So, Marvin Hogan down in St. Petersburg, Florida, great to know you're still kicking and you sound great. And I'll be back to you. So thanks for joining us this morning.
Stay warm, Fred.
Thank you. Marvin Honig, former Rensselaer County attorney and very interesting figure from another era in Rensselaer County, several eras, really. And I had hoped to get into his childhood, which was also fascinating. He grew up, I think, on a farm. But this is Fred Dicker. We've got to take a break. We'll be right back.
TrustCo is the Capital District's hometown bank and mortgage leader. Right now, you can get your home buying plans off to a great start by stopping by your nearby TrustCo branch outlet and meeting with your local branch manager. TrustCo offers home mortgages at a low cost with low rates. And when you leave your local branch, you'll actually have your closing date to finalize your TrustCo mortgage. Be sure to get up-to-date information about all the other banking services offered by TrustCo. Home equity loans, online banking services, including text alerts and e-statements, and money market accounts information are always available at TrustCoBank.com. TrustCo offers financial services, including financial planning, investment management, and estate settlement planning. TrustCo also wants you to remember that branch outlets and mortgages are available throughout Central Florida. You can use your same checks and same PIN numbers in Florida that you use right here at home. From the Capital District of New York to Central Florida, the only bank you need is TrustCo. TrustCo, your hometown bank. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
Mohawk Honda has finished the year in record style with over 5,100 vehicles sold and delivered in 2014. Wow, over 5,100 vehicles sold by the Capital Region's number one volume Honda dealer. Mohawk Honda wants to thank all of you who made it possible and are ready to race to 6,000 in 2015. How did they do it? The best selection at the best prices with the best customer service. Mohawk Honda's 170-plus automotive professionals pride themselves on providing you with the most impeccable customer service. Shop over 10 acres of savings opportunities with over 1,000 vehicles available to choose from. Save thousands with Mohawk Honda's no-hassle, one-low price on every pre-owned vehicle in stock. Being number one is all about doing the right thing all the time. At Mohawk Honda, you will receive the experience you have always been looking for and deserve. Shop online 24/7 at MohawkHonda.com or visit the showroom on Route 50 in Glenville. Mohawk Honda, where they go out of their way to please you. Number one volume based on 2013 and 2014 new vehicle sales per AHM.
Some people visit pizzadeliverywebsite.com/pizza or some other website to order pizza. But you have to create an account, remember your password, enter your credit card. At Little Caesars, we have large hot and ready pepperoni pizzas for $5 every day or large deep, deep dish pepperoni pizzas for $8. Hot and ready every day from 4 to 8. And there's no difficult pizza website. But if you like difficult pizza websites, everything I've just said is one long web address we invite you to visit. .html. Little Caesars, world's easiest way to pizza.
Pizza, pizza.
At participating locations plus tax.
Let's return to Live from the State Capitol with Fred Dicker here on Talk 1300.
And welcome back to the State Capitol. My thanks to John Kowalski for giving me a heads up on the story. It's all over now, national political story. Mitt Romney announcing he is not going to seek the Republican nomination to run for president once again. A big announcement from Mitt Romney just made. If it was made, I think it's been somebody had the scoop. He may have also announced it just a couple of minutes ago. I'm sure it'll be on the national news, but it is a big deal. My thanks to Marvin Honig for joining us this morning. Boy, I wish I had more time and other stories I'd love to tell. My thanks to Michael Benjamin. I thought I would end the show, just have a few seconds remaining, with the theme song that I started the show with, dedicated to the New York State Legislature.
WGDJ, Rensselaer, Paul Vandenberg, Fred Dicker, and Michael Sabajeptinos, the Capital District's talk station, Talk 1300.